Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Naham tu, what was yesterday's? Evam mad ato jita lokaveda. Svanam hivo mayano nuvritaye abala. Maya paroksham bhajata tirohitam. Masu itam marhatatat priyam priya. Evam maroto jitaloka veda. Svanam hivo mayano vrittaye abala. Mayo paroksham bhajata tarohitam. Masuitam marhatata tat priyam priya. Evam. Thus. Mat. Mai. So Krishna is speaking here. Artha. For the sake. Ujjita. Having rejected. Loka. Worldly opinion. Veda. The opinion of the Vedas. Swanam. And relatives. He. Indeed. Va of you, Mayi, for me, Anuvrittaye, for the loving propensity, Abala, my dear girls. So in the first part of this verse over here, what is Krishna saying? To understand clearly what he is saying, we'll have to take a step backwards. There's an old Chinese saying that before you step forwards, you have to take a step backwards. Possibly that's true if you're going to take a big jump. So each of these verses that Krishna is speaking is full of deepest meanings. These verses actually are practically speaking the most intimate part of the Bhagavatam, because in these verses Krishna is revealing his own heart in reciprocation with the gopis and their pure love for him. So it is very, very rare, and in one sense, it is quite astounding how we here who are down under, somehow or another, in one little insignificant city, in a little insignificant world, are hearing the most confidential topics in existence. Because there are so many religionists, and there are so many materialists in the world, or even below that, there are so many non-humans in existence. And they are transmigrating from one body to the next based on their karma, based on their desires. But very, very rarely, only when one gets the mercy of Krishna, does one come in contact with this type of Krishna Katha, this type of discussions about Krishna. Guru Krishna Pasare Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. Brahmanda Brahmate means traveling. After traveling all over the universe, in what sense do we travel all over the universe? Impelled by our desires and our karma, adhishtayam manashtayam vishaya upasevate, we take one birth after the next. This is a very dangerous system. Why? Because our desires, it is not that we are being forced in one sense into one situation or another. It is our desires that are pushing us or pulling us. Our desires, our own thoughts, what we wish, they are pushing us by Krishna's grace into one situation after the next, and that leads us to one birth after the next. Sometimes we're able to enjoy on a certain level. Sometimes it's, practically speaking, complete suffering. Every once in a while, in particular seasons, we see some creepy crawling little creature walking on the ground with its thousand arms or legs, and just somehow or another going. Where is he going? What is in this little creature's mind that impels all those little hairy type of legs to move forward? They're just impelled and have to suffer with such a diminutive consciousness. They can't perceive even where they are. They just know the food that they're going for, and then they wrap themselves in a cocoon, this and that. Such a birth that is simply meant for suffering. So one after the next, Brahmanda Brahmate, wandering, based on the mind's desires, wandering from one birth to the next, from one body to the next. And then somehow or another, if we are fortunate, we take a birth in a human body. And I say if we are fortunate, because there is, practically speaking, we're carrying with us unlimited karma. Unlimited karma, practically speaking. So if Krishna, by His mercy, is the super soul, He desires or allows us to take a human birth, He takes that portion of karma. Otherwise, practically speaking, if we had to live out all the karma that we have, that we've accumulated for hundreds and thousands and millions and even billions of births, there's so much karma accumulated that, practically speaking, if we had to get rid of everything, then we may never, ever have the opportunity of taking a human birth. So this is the mercy of Krishna. And then in human birth, there are those who don't feel that there is any purpose of life whatsoever. And this, at the present time, is more or less everyone, or rather no transcendental purpose of life. People just think, yeah, here I am, and I'm going to enjoy in this way and that way. Buying, shopping, surfing, who knows what, anything. Dropping from the sky with a rubber band attached to your leg. People find out the most peculiar ways to make their attempt to enjoy, because everyone is suffering and can't find the enjoyment that they're longing for, yet that is their goal, to enjoy. And it's so elusive. And then out of all the materialistic persons who see no transcendental goal in life, there are some religionists, and out of the religionists, people have a tend, even if they are very pious, they have tend to have quite an abstract conception of the absolute truth of God. And while the material world is so concrete and present, that abstract conception of God does not attract them, their consciousness, except for the rarest of souls, does not attract their consciousness enough to be actually renounced, and even in their religiosity, it doesn't attract their consciousness enough to have a transcendental purpose in life. And even when they can think of going to heaven, what in the world do you do when you get to heaven? What is it like there? What's the concept? It's just, it's like angels on clouds, and they play the harp. I guess they can't plug into their electric guitars or something. What do you do in heaven? So it's very, very vague and abstract. And what is it that pulls one upward in spiritual life? And what is the ultimate goal of it? No one has any idea, in fact. Prema Pamato Mahan Panchama Purusharta. The topmost gain is love for Krishna. And one's advancement in consciousness, not only in human life, but in consciousness, is judged simply by this one standard alone, one's religiosity. It is judged by this one standard, and this one standard alone, how much one has developed love for God or Krishna. So here, after having gone through 10 cantos of the Bhagavatam, we're now in one third of the way through the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva is revealing through this conversation between Krishna and his most beloved gopis the topmost level of consciousness. The very topmost level of consciousness, because again, consciousness is judged simply by this, how much one has loved, how much one loves the Supreme Lord, how much one loves Krishna. And there is no one in existence in the past, the present, or the future who loves Krishna more than the Brajagopis. Their love is so complete. It is completely complete, yes, yet there is variety in that love, and it has room for expansion. Practically speaking, from our perspective in the material world, which is basically Atma Endriya Priti, Vansha Tare Bali Kam, it is basically a position where we are trapped in selfishness and self-desire and lust. Kama means lust or selfish desire. So practically speaking, it is very difficult for us to conceive of the selflessness that love actually is. The caring for the other, the beloved. It is difficult for us to conceive of what love is. One time, years and years ago, maybe 15 years ago, myself and another devotee, we had some business, and we had some work we had to do. And in Vrindavan, we were speaking to one of Prabhupada's dear God brothers, Bhakti Bhairav Puri Maharaj. And he said, "You Westerners, you want to understand everything. You want to understand what love of, you know, of what Vrindavan is and the love that goes on there. But it is hard enough even to consider what love actually is." And then he told a funny example of what love is. He said he knew one time of a mother who had a son who was 65 years old. Mm-hmm. And she still would feed him
with our own hand. Now in the West, we would consider that there's something quite psychopathic about that. And she would feed him, like mothers do with their 6-month-year-old child or 1-year-old child. But he was using that as an example just to show what love is, that parental love, that motherly love is. It is beyond logic. It is beyond... Certainly the fellow didn't need to be spoon-fed. But it was the nature of love. And what was he tasting when she put the food in his mouth? What was he tasting? He was tasting her love. So it is very difficult to understand even love like that. What to speak of the selflessness of the love of the Braja Gopis. And Krishna is going to say in the next verse that this love that you have is so powerful. Practically speaking, it has defeated me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the All-Powerful One. As we've been saying, the one from whom skin holes comes innumerable universes, who Mama Angso Tejo Sambhava, the entirety of material creation is resting upon him. And he is defeated by the love of the Braja Gopis in a way just like the love of that elderly mother completely controls a 65-year-old son. Krishna becomes completely controlled by the love of his devotees. So this highest emblem of love, which practically speaking or actually speaking is inconceivable for us to understand, because there is not the slightest tinge of selfishness within it. This love, prema pramato mahan, is the goal. And the process of devotional service, the process of bhakti yoga, is the process of developing love for Krishna. And it is love that everyone is longing for. It is not knowledge. It is not enjoyment on the material level. It is relationship. It is love. And this love that one can develop with Krishna is so powerful that it evokes Krishna's mercy. And by that process of invoking Krishna's mercy, by that process one advances. It is not, we talk about the importance of hearing and chanting about Krishna. Yes, it is so important, but it is not mechanical. It is not like putting your money in the machine and you're getting something back. You know, your soft drink back. It's not mechanical. It is a matter of reciprocatory love. So because it's not mechanical, because when you're putting your money in the machine, if you're doing it every day, then you could do it completely mechanically. You don't even have to think about it. It's mechanical. You can, even when we're driving the car, if we're going to the same place day after day, you don't even have to think about it. You just sort of get in the car and say, "Car, bring me to the destination." And suddenly your mind goes somewhere else and you're thinking about everything you have to do today, what you did yesterday, this, that, this and that, and suddenly you're there. Safely. You've dodged the traffic, you've stopped at the red lights, you've gone on the green lights, and suddenly you're there with just a small portion of your mind intent upon it. But Krishna consciousness and hearing about Krishna is not like that at all. Although dare I say that we tend to do it like that. We could sit in class and we can sit there properly. That's one thing you see about the children. They haven't mastered the art of hypocrisy yet. So when their minds are outside, their bodies start moving around and doing funny things all the time, but we master the art of sitting there as if our minds were in the room, because our bodies are in the room. And what happens, practically speaking, our mind goes in and out of the room. You ever notice that? The mind's there for a few seconds, then it goes somewhere else. Then if we're lucky, it comes back. And sometimes it never comes back at all. It just goes. It just keeps going. And that happens with our japa, saying our mantras and our service that we do. And then the thing that's lacking is consciousness. And without consciousness, there cannot be loving consciousness. And without loving consciousness or bhakti, then Krishna doesn't become attracted to it. Of course, even a long journey begins with its first and initial steps, but yet we should understand what's being demanded of us as we practice Krishna consciousness. It's a matter of Krishna consciousness. Krishna bhakti rasata bhavato mati, tasting the mellow, the sweet mellow of our relationship with Krishna. And then the service we do, the activities we perform, become savor or devotional service by making them loving offerings. So this is the topmost consciousness, Krishna consciousness. When everything is done impelled by the internal consciousness of wishing to please Krishna with great love. And the gopis are the greatest masters of this love due to the sweetness of their particular mood, as well as the full intensity, full and complete intensity of that love. Again, it is like an ant or smaller than an ant, some little microscopic beast looking up at the top of the Himalayan mountains, trying to understand what's at the top of that, what's it like. But through the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we get a glimpse of this. We get a glimpse of this. It's quite incredible. We get a glimpse of this by his activities and by his teachings and by the process that he's giving, because he wants to award this. We get a glimpse of it, and his taking on the mood of Srimati Radharani is so intense. Krishna acting as the devotee, it's so intense for him that he's completely crying all the time. Tears are coming from his eyes like what? Like torrents of rain. In a moment. Yugai tam nameshena. Namesha means the blinking of an eye appears like a yuga or thousands of years in length. Can we imagine even the intensity of the love that a moment or the blinking of the eye when the residents of Vrindavan can't see Krishna appears like thousands of years? What the consciousness, the loving consciousness must be like? Because in many ways, you don't know. You ever hear the expression, you don't know what you have until you lose it? Is there something like that in Hindi or some other languages? But in English, you don't know what the value of what you have until you lose it. Because then you really miss it. And only if I had it back again. And that was the example given in the previous verse, when Krishna had explained, "My dear gopis, the reason I disappeared from you was," and he gave an example. Does anyone remember what that example was? When a poor man, he gets wealth, finally he gets what he was longing for, money. And then he loses it. He loses everything. And all he can think of is that lost money. And when one's mind is disturbed by a loss, you can't think of anything but it, but that thing. What to speak of when that loss is Krishna and your desire is to be with him and serve him and love him, and then he disappears. The blinking of an eye appears like a yuga. Or even with the cowherd boys, when Krishna and they're playing in the forest with the cows, and Krishna walks behind a tree, how long does it take for a boy when he's walking somewhere behind a tree and they can't see him for a moment? Then it's torture for them. We're trying to get a glimpse of what's going on in Vrindavan. And how when Krishna goes out to herd the cows, the cowherd boys are so happy. And all the residents of Vrindavan who are left behind, the mothers, the fathers, the young girls, the little children, it's intolerable for them. It's intolerable for them. And here in the West, not in the West only, but in contemporary civilization, the protection against of all the suffering. People just want to make themselves into individual units and not deal with anyone else, practically speaking. It's just them and their monitor and keyboard, their computer or something like that. And it doesn't have to be anything else. Construct a virtual reality that's better than this, because there's so much suffering here. But everyone is incredibly and only lonely, because it's completely unnatural. We long for relationship. We long for depth of relationship. We long for love. The soul itself longs for these things. And the proper placement of that love, the proper expansion of that love, is when the love is placed on Krishna. That's or offered to Krishna. That's the message of the Krishna consciousness movement. That Krishna is the object of love that everyone has been looking for. When a child is young, his love, first love is his mother, then it expands to mother and father, then to mother, father and children, then brothers, sisters, then mother, father, brothers, sisters, friends. And then when he gets older, gets married, and then love expands more, and then expands to children. And then one can expand one's love, so one loves, one feels compassion and love for every human being. And then one can expand one's love so one can feel compassion and love for every thing that lives in this world. From the Christian saints who would speak like that. Even in the Christian tradition, the animals. And then there is no question, if one's love is expanded in that way, there's no question of, should I be a vegetarian or shouldn't I be a vegetarian? No, how can one eat something when you have a relationship like that with it, cruelly. But still, even if one expands one's love to that degree, one will not be satisfied unless one places one's love at the lotus feet of Krishna in a serving mood. Krishna, that Krishna is the natural object of love, jivera sarup. Sarupa means our own form, who we are. He is what and who we are looking for in one of the different relationships. And the gopis are the topmost emblem of that love. So Krishna has to explain, and in this exchange between Krishna and the gopis in their full love came to Krishna. He called them with his flute. And when and our acharyas have explained that Krishna's, when he would call, when he would play his flute in this way, he would, the flute sound would call the specific name of every gopi. And it would enter their heart and practically would pull them out. Because they were so captivated by what? By Krishna's form, by Krishna's qualities, Krishna's beauty, his sweetness in dealing, his charmingness, his personality. They were entrapped in the net of love for Krishna. So they came out. And how did Krishna treat them? They left everything, and that's what this verse refers to. They left everything for Krishna. They left their family, they left religiousness, what is commonly known as dharma, because they were married in the middle of the night, going to dance with a young boy, very irreligious, worldly opinion. They left that, and they did not care. They just cared about pleasing Krishna. This is love. And how did Krishna reciprocate with them? You know, when you take something and you offer it to someone you love, you expect at least, oh, thank you very much. Well, you know, we expect something. You know, we make an offering all the time. And then especially people say, thank you, thank you, thank you for everything, thank you, thank you. Because if we don't hear thank you, we get very insulted. Oh, you're not acknowledging. Thank you means you're an acknowledgement of the gift of what you've done. So you open the door for someone, an elderly person, and say thank you. And if they don't say thank you, you suddenly think very ungrateful. Say, oh, you know, I've done something for them and they're... And what did Krishna do? What did Krishna do? He said, okay, thank you very much for coming. Now you can go home. And so much so, they get so upset with him through their own love, because love, it's not qualityless. It's full of different varieties of emotion interacting with each other. In love, there is the ability to become angry. But it doesn't diminish the love, because the sthayi bhav, the essential part is immovable. It's love. Love means you're only thinking of the benefit of the other. So Krishna reciprocated with them in a very cold way. And then finally he danced with them as they had wanted, the rest of the dance. And then he disappeared from that. He left them and they went mad. And that madness was their madness in love. Krishna had churned the rasa. the relationship to such a degree that their ecstasy of love, that ocean was overflowing the shore by his way of dealing. He would call them out and then say, go away, and then dance with them and then leave the dance. And their minds would be spinning in their love for Krishna. And then Krishna came back, and that spinning mind gave birth to the previous chapter, the 31st chapter. The gopis, the gopis' songs of separation, known as Gopi Gita. They're singing in very, very, very beautiful words of their love for Krishna. But always, all they're actually caring about and worried about and concerned about is, oh, is Krishna all right? See, and when Krishna finally, when he leaves Vrindavan, as we know, and goes to Mathura, Srimati Radharani, the topmost of the Prajagopis, she has no reason to live. No reason to live. In this world nowadays, separation, divorce, just find another one, another partner. What's the difference? No love. And everyone is, the physical may be there, but there's no love. And there's no rasa. And therefore, no, everyone is so dissatisfied. No commitment even. Without commitment, that internal, I'm yours, I've committed. There's no question of love. So even that's not there, and the whole society suffers from all this. Now the ethic is, now we will stay together as partners as long as it serves our own interests, and then we will go away. I've heard it actually written and stated in this way. As long as we are both satisfied by the relationship, it is our duty to stay together, but if somehow you are getting in the way of my happiness, it is my duty to move on. My duty to who? My duty for me. And life is all about me. And therefore, no wonder everyone is so disappointed and disillusioned in this world, because they think life is about me. And life isn't about me. It's about, even on the material level, it's about service. And the more we think life is about me, the more disturbed we are, the more we end up serving. We can't avoid it. We're servants by nature. So this whole illusion that life is about me is a disaster for people's consciousness. Because then it places everyone in such a disappointed consciousness, because we think life is about me, but no one else will agree to this principle. What to speak of the universe? The universe is determined to teach us this lesson that life isn't about you at all. You're insignificant. An insignificant servant. But you might not understand that you're an insignificant soul, lover of Krishna, but at least I'm going to teach you that you're insignificant. You may not, you'll be determined to the end, but you'll see you're insignificant. No one cares. Everyone is trying to be significant, but we can't be anything other than an insignificant servant of Krishna. One time when I saw in India, they have on the license plates, if someone's like a member of parliament, they always, they put on the license plate MP or MLA or something like that, and then they put a fancy little a red light that goes around and round. And a flag, so everyone knows, oh, someone very important is coming along. So I saw one person in a car like that, and on the license plate it didn't say MP, it said brother of the MP.
you can imagine, my friend is a brother of the MP, so I'm very important, and if you don't do what I say, you know, something bad will happen to you. My sister's cousin's friend's uncle knows someone who knows the MP.
But all we are is simply insignificant. And Krishna is significant. So again, bhakti yoga is the process of coming in touch with the insignificant, coming in touch with the significant. So why did Krishna treat the gopis in this way? And they were so upset with him in their love that they went mad, practically speaking. And then he returned. And they asked him their trick question. And that was, "Oh Krishna, here we are, we've given everything to you. But there are three kinds of lovers. The one who is self-satisfied, the one who just does business, I love you as much as you love me. And then there's the one who is just kripa, who, like the parents and the great devotees, they just give regardless of how much there's a reciprocation. And then there is the ones who don't reciprocate at all. Which one do you think is the best?" And in this way, they wanted to hear Krishna admit that he wasn't treating them properly because they had given everything to him. And when these descriptions, which we read two days ago, were described of the those who don't reciprocate properly, the Atmaram, Aptakam, Akrita Gyan and Guru Drohi, it describes first those who are self-satisfied on a spiritual level and materially satisfied, and they don't reciprocate, they don't feel the need to. And then it starts describing two lower ones, the ungrateful. You're being given something and you're ungrateful. And then even worse, inimical. And different levels of inimicalness, from critical to different types of betrayals. And then we see, at least I can't say we, you see the nature of my soul, the nature of my heart, so ungrateful. Been given such a wonderful gift and don't feel I have any responsibility in return. Hard-hearted. And this is actually this is due to aparad offenses, actually. Not being able to appreciate the gift in a proper way. And then justifying, I've been given a gift and why am I not reciprocating with it? Because the reciprocation of a great gift, the greatest gift, has to be complete. The reciprocation of the ultimate gift has to be full. And therefore, because I'm so hard-hearted and offensive, I don't reciprocate with it. What's the reason? Oh, it must be their fault. And the whole illusion defense mechanism comes up. The whole victim mentality also comes up. So very embarrassing to hear what love is. It creates great lamentation, or it should create great lamentation and remorse in the heart. So Krishna had replied in the verse we read yesterday to this question of the gopis. He said, "I remove myself. I appear not to be reciprocating, but actually I am, and I have a purpose." And he said that those who are immature in their love, I don't reciprocate. But those who are surrendered, they're committed, fully committed. But they're immature in their love. I don't, my seeming lack of reciprocation is a reciprocation that's purposeful. And the purpose is it fills the person with lamentation, thinking that it is due to the poor quality of my love that I'm not getting the reciprocation. It is due to my offenses, offensiveness, and my lust, and my anger, and all my self-centeredness. It's due to me and my impurity that I'm not getting the reciprocation with Krishna that I want. And that lamentation, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, that lamentation, when turned inward instead of outward and blaming everyone else, when turned inward, it purifies the heart of all lust and of all offenses. Because it brings, just as Mahaprabhu said, Trinadapi, Suni Chainaturodapi, Srihisna Mani Namanadena Kirtani Asadari, it brings humility. And humility allows one to call out for shelter sincerely. It allows one to be fixed